I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max 1 offer per account.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dottiglio along with Charlie Long running things behind the scenes. At 4:45 today, we'll do it a little bit early. It'll be our Bet 365 triple option feature. We'll talk a little bit about the tight end position available for the 2025 draft and be just 2 weeks away. And it's not as good as it was 2 years ago, but it's pretty doggone good when you talk about 2 first-round pick tight ends and Tyler Warren and Coastin Loveland and 2 guys that I think will go pretty early in round 2. Mason Taylor from LSU and Elijah Arroyo from University of Miami of Florida. And, man, if Elijah had stayed healthy, he might be pressing Mason on that mark. So 4 really, really good tight end prospects, and certainly there are some a little bit later down the road, and we'll talk about that also. Before we start talking about, and certainly the Masters starts today, and all eyes are on that, and right now Justin Rose has the lead, but Scottie Scheffler, he's right there behind him, along with Corey Connors and Rory McIlroy. And see, the love or hate with Rory McIlroy, but yeah, he's in the 4th spot, and so Charlie will keep everybody up to date on the Masters and the opening round. And Charlie, before we go too far, happy birthday to you.
Hey.
What's your 27 years
27
old?
27 now, Mike. I appreciate what? It, man. That's cool.
Man, 27 years. I sort of remember 27 years ago. Now, I don't remember what I did when I was 27, but I got some advice. Just don't go celebrate your 27th birthday with A-Bear tonight.
Yeah, 27 seems kind of like a cursed age. So I think I'm just going to stay in tonight, Mike, and maybe enjoy some Chinese food and watch the replay of the Masters because I missed most of it today.
Yeah, okay. Me and Bobby, we'll take you out one night, but don't go out by himself.
Yeah.
We got to have a designated driver
there
somewhere along
there. I appreciate it, Mike.
Right. Again, happy birthday to you. You do a super job, and can't be more proud of you and how well you've grown in this business. You've done a great job. Again, there's a certain look, you know, at the Masters and being at Augusta, and it is something we'll talk a lot more about. We'll have Michael Arkish on. He rated the top 100 golfers of all time. But there is something about, you know, growing up and you watch the Masters, and you know, I grew up in that era, you know, Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus and Lee Trevino and those guys – you know, there were such huge personalities, but it's the look of that golf tournament. It's the look of that feel. And it's sort of the same way, you know, growing up and you watch the Pebble Beach Open and the U.S. Open and you know, the Open now at St. Andrews. And to see that today, it is a visual sight like no other. It really is. It's really something to see if you haven't been there.
It's on my bucket list, Mike. I've always wanted to go, but I've never been to Augusta National. It is gorgeous. I mean, when you think of the Masters, you think of like Sunday morning, early afternoon, watching like, you know, these professionals just compete in this gorgeous atmosphere. And Augusta National Park is just beautiful. I mean, I'm looking at it right now. You know, it's definitely on my bucket list. I can't wait to dive into it with Michael Arkush later on in the 520 segment and kind of get his thoughts because, yeah, the top 100 golfers of all time, it's a really fascinating, you know, sport to rank because it's the most personal sport. Like if you're excelling or if you're performing badly, it's all on you. It's nobody else's fault. It's not a team sport. It's a personal sport. So I'm really looking forward to diving into some of the best golfers of all time with them.
Yeah, I did see Nicholas.
Yes.
And I think all of us, you know, kind of watch Tiger. Now, Bobby Jones, no, I didn't cover him or Ben Hogan, but I did get to see Arnold Palmer and, you know, Bobby Jones and the Ben Hogan stories, man, and they got a lot of them out there, and they've done movies on both Bobby Jones and Ben Hogan about their careers in golf. But certainly the Masters is just a unique event in America sports and how it's covered in so many memorable Sunday afternoons when everything on the line. And you talk about pressure. And there's no leaning on your offensive guard or your fullback here. You got to be the guy to sink those putts and to make it work on the long drive. So we'll talk a lot more about that with Michael Arkush. And he did come out with the book, The Golf 100, and we'll have him at 5:20, at 4:20 today. When I first took over this job, one of the things I told Kevin Cassidy and Di Newman was that we have so many people locally that they don't get the spotlight shown on them. But, man, they're just so great at their profession. And one of them is Boo Schicksnyder. And Boo will be on with us at 4:20 today. And just to think about Boo and what he's done throughout his career, over 40 years, he had an 18-year career as a coach for the LSU track and field team. He's been a part of 13 NCAA championship teams.
It's pretty good, Mike.
Two junior college national title teams. He's coached 18 Olympic medalists and 26 Pan American Game medalists. He went to high school at St. James High School, and he went to college at Nicholls State. You know, and he's got a camp that's coming up this weekend, and we'll talk to Boo about it. But you think about a guy that, you know, not a lot of people know about Boo and what he's been able to do. Trained so many athletes from track and field to baseball, football, basketball. Just had a great career, and I thought it was time to have Boo on to talk about that and certainly about his camp for youths in the area this coming Saturday at Nicholls State University. So when we come back, we'll have Boo on with us, and we'll have a lot more here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTellier along with Charlie Long, and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. Man, he's done it for over 40 years, one of the top trainers in the country, and he sits right in our backyard, Boo Schicksnyder. And Boo, thanks so much for joining us. Before we start talking about other things, you have a camp this coming Saturday at Nicholls State, and that's where you graduated college from, for some of the youth in the area for speed and conditioning. So tell everybody a little bit about it and how they can get involved.
Yeah, I'm doing a camp. Well, first of all, thanks for having me, Mike, and it's good to talk again. But yeah, I'm having this camp at Nicholls State. It's a fundraiser, actually, that I'm doing for the Nicholls State Track and Field Program. You all know that track and field is kind of a sport that's close to my heart. Anyway, we're going to do the camp. It's for athletes of both genders, boys or girls, age 8 to 12. And it's not a sport-specific camp. It's a speed-based camp. It's going to start on Saturday the 12th at 1, and it's going to extend out till 4 o'clock, so 3 hours, and it's $50. And, again, the proceeds are going to the Nicholas Track and Field Program, and I'm excited about it. I enjoy working with young athletes. I don't get a chance to do it too much, so I'm inviting people to come out, and parents, feel free to bring out your cameras and things like that, because I'll be offering not only some good instruction at the camp, but a lot of good take-home stuff as well. And if you want to get in touch with somebody to register, the website is nichols.edu/campsandspecialprograms. Camps and Special Programs is separated with hyphens.
Boo, one of the things, man, and I hear it sometimes from guys, I can take a guy that's not fast and I can make him fast. And I say, there ain't no way in the world, okay? God made people fast. Now, what you can do is take a guy who's fast and maybe chip away and get him a little bit faster in this world. But if you're not fast, you can't kind of like bewitched and twinkle your nose and all of a sudden make him fast. It don't work that way.
No, it doesn't. And at the same time, speed is important, but speed is developable. There's a lot of athletes that for one reason or another just don't reach their speed potential, I guess is what we're saying. We all do have a genetic potential. I'm of the opinion, frankly, that probably more athletes don't reach their speed potential than do reach their speed potential. And everybody's capable of improving. Unfortunately, the parents you choose and the heredity and the genetics are the things that probably dictate more than anything else what your ceiling is. But good strategies and good training will get you toward that ceiling.
Boo, one of the things, and I read off your resume, and, you know, being part of 13 NCAA championship teams and two junior college national titles and basically almost two dozen Olympic medalists and Pan American game people, what's the one trait the top people in that business have? If there's a trait or two each of them have.
Well, outside of the talent, I assume, because, you know, ultimately as a coach, you're not really creating anything. You're developing talent, meaning that the talent is there and you're trying to get it out of them. But the one thing that I think these people basically have more than anything else is they have what I call a pioneer spirit, meaning that they train and they are constantly looking forward. Success doesn't affect them. Failure doesn't affect them. They're always looking forward to the next challenge. And in some ways, they're willing to risk everything they have in order to take on that next challenge, in order to take on that next opportunity. You know, sometimes I listen to ESPN radio and those types of channels, and I hear about these athletes and how they may look at their legacies and whatever. The great ones I've had don't care about their legacies. They're just worried about the next thing. You know, and if they fail at the next thing, then they're worried about the one after that. So always looking forward, never being afraid of the next challenge, and actually embracing the next challenge is, to me, probably the single greatest characteristic they show.
Boo, one of the things, and I'll throw it out at you because so many people will call in about the hamstring injury. But, you know, you and I have sat in a room and you've explained that hamstring situation so many times I could repeat it. But I'll let you kind of talk about that's an injury that it's prevalent certainly in the track and field world. We see it in the NFL. And you have, I'm not saying a remedy, but you have something that you think would help you get not having those hamstring injuries.
Yeah, I think what happens, Mike, and in fact, I know what happened, and this is my line of work. You know, I visit NFL camps and go over this kind of stuff with NFL teams and such. But ultimately, hamstring injuries, first of all, are not luck. They happen for reasons. And those reasons are related to biomechanics, meaning that the actual way we move or the actual way forces are transmitted through your muscles and through your bones and so forth create those types of injuries. And there are certain types of training that are helpful as far as prevention and others aren't. And I think what actually happens is because of the fact that when you sprint fast, you know, and maybe an injury happens, then you crawl into a shell and you get nervous. And as a result of that, you don't actually prepare. And then you've got an infestation of hamstring injuries. I've seen this happen so many times on so many teams where one athlete gets a hamstring injury. And it's unfortunate, but it's understandable why it happened. But suddenly now all the coaches, everybody's scared. Nobody's training hard anymore. And then now you have a onslaught of hamstring injuries just because of the fact that everybody got scared and crawled into a shell. So, you know, ultimately, you know, sprinting is important, and sprinting is the best way to condition the hamstring, and that's what I try to sell people on.
Boo, if you had your Mount Rushmore of athletes you've worked with, who would be on that Mount Rushmore?
Oh, wow, Mike, it's really hard to say. I mean, because I've had the opportunity to work with so many great ones, you know. I'm sure that Walter Davis and John Moffitt would be up there as well. But there's so many athletes that I've had an opportunity to spend time with and coach and whatever in different capacities. You know, Damian Warner was a person that I've spent a lot of time working with, and he was an Olympic gold medalist. He would, I guess, be one of those people, although I wasn't his only coach and I wasn't the only person responsible for his success. And then I had another young lady at LSU who was a multiple NCAA champ. She was she's in LSU's Hall of Fame, named Suzette Lee, and she was ultimately a freakish athlete. And I guess I would have to put those people up at the top, I guess, as far as people that I actually got a chance to work with.
Who, kind of going back to your talk about the soft tissue and specifically hamstring injuries, I think a lot of fans in New Orleans have obviously been very disappointed with the first 6 years of Zion Williamson's career and how just struck by injury he's been. And most recently, a couple hamstring injuries have really played them, the hamstring strains. Is there something mm-hmm. that he can do? Or is there, you just kind of attest that to his build? It's a very unique kind of person as far as his athletic build goes. And, you know, the hamstring injuries have started to pile up recently.
Well, that's true. And I also think that's part of the problem, is because everybody looks at Zion and the way he's built and the fact that he's built a little differently and feels that he's an exception to the rule. And the bottom line is, when you're working with an athlete like this and conditioning and hamstring strengthening is an important part of it, you double down on your basic principles. You don't look at that as an exceptional case in that regard. Looking at it as an exceptional case is what ultimately dooms you to failure in dealing with that particular situation. Yeah, he's a little different as far as the way he's built and some of the anatomical things that you see, but his hamstring injuries occur for the same reasons that any other hamstring injuries actually occur. But because he's a big horsepower person, you know, there's a little more horsepower, so he has a little less room for error.
Boo, one of the guys we saw, and he dominated, you know, certainly fastest man in the world, and Usain Bolt, and a unique athlete in that, you know, he was a guy, just the way he was built, because he sought a tall cut as a sprinter, to dominate as for as long as he did, it's really a remarkable feat in today's world.
Yeah, it really is. He was a true generational person, you know, and people that don't really follow the sport of track and field kind of looked at him at the peak of his career. But he's been phenomenal going way back to when he was 14, 15 years old. So everybody kind of, so he was kind of like the LeBron James of track and field, so to speak. Everybody kind of knew when he was coming up in high school that he was just going to be a totally dominant person. And you're correct. He's tall, he's rangy, but honestly, a lot of times people kind of perceive tall and rangy as a disadvantage in the sprints. Actually, it's a tremendous advantage if you're willing to train hard enough to get strong enough to manage those long legs that you have.
Because a lot of times he wasn't the fastest to come out the blocks. Mm-hmm. So I think people say, man, look, he didn't come out the blocks well, but then he ended up catching you and sort of turned around and said, you ain't gonna beat me today. He was unique in that, because most sprinters, the really good ones, man, they get out of the blocks like, man, it's like wildfire. That, you can't say that Bolt was one of those type of guys.
No, you can't. And, you know, Carl Lewis wasn't either, Mike. You
yes.
and I are old enough to remember watching Carl run. But at the same time, good sprint coaches teach what's called a race distribution, meaning that being first early doesn't really guarantee you anything. And there are certain mistakes you can make in sprinting that'll actually put you first earlier and cost you later in the race. And people like Carl Lewis, Usain Bolt, they're well coached. They have good race models and what we call good race distributions. And they kind of know exactly where they need to be with each part of the race. You know, if you drive a stick shift, you know you got to spend time in low gear before you get to high gear, or else the engine kind of bogs down. And that's what Usain Bolt is good at. He understands how much time he has to spend in low gear before he can, you know, shift and get up to high speed.
Boo, I got a texter ask me about, do you train people in for the swimming? And also in beach volleyball, that's become, man, you and I grew up, beach volleyball, yeah, you watched that maybe on TV. That was done in California. That wasn't done here. Man, you go to Thibodaux Regional Medical Center, man, they got 8 courts there. And beach volleyball has really taken off, and also the swimming stuff. So is there a specific training for both those individual sports?
Yeah, there is. Every sport has its own unique training regimen. It's funny you should say that about the beach volleyball. It's just incredible how popular that's become when that was just kind of a niche thing so long ago. But yeah, every sport has its own unique routine, its own unique demands, and that means there's a unique training program for that. I don't actually coach athletes in those sports, but I have done some consulting work with volleyball programs, and I've done some consulting work with swimming programs, helping coaches to kind of tailor their programs. But yeah, they're two unique sports, and I really enjoy watching both.
The weightlifting part of things, because, man, you know, kind of like when you and I grew up, it was like, man, you don't lift too many weights. You know, it'll make you muscle bound. And today, that's all they do. And a lot of times, I think maybe sort of a on the downside, they want to look like bodybuilders, but, you know, is it trained for the individual sport? So how the world of weightlifting has really, really changed over our lifetime, especially.
Yeah, it has. You know, I remember at high school, when I was in high school, like weightlifting was practically new, so to speak. And I remember our coach getting a piece of pipe and some old train wheels and welding them and making us do some things. And now we have what we have here today. But I'll be honest with you, Mike. I think there were some of the things that we used to do back then that weren't weightlifting that were very valuable. And to be very frank with you, I agree with you. Like, weight training is undoubtedly a critical part of training for just about any sport. But at the same time, I think that we've kind of gone overboard on weightlifting to some extent in some programs and in some sports, to the point where athletes are not as flexible as they used to be. They're not as skilled and loose as they used to be. And as a result, they pay a little bit of a price for that. And to be frank with you, I think that's real reason why injuries are escalating in certain sports, is just because we kind of overvalue that type of work, and we kind of have those muscle head philosophies. And even though weightlifting is a critical piece, you can't just sell out on it, so to speak. Everything else really has to come together in your program.
Boo, thanks for joining us this evening. But one more time, if anybody's interested in attending your camp, and which is basically a fundraiser for Nichols State Track, and know the young lady who runs the track program there. She's one hell of an athlete too now. Oh, and long distance runner, man, she can do that extremely well. But tell them exactly how they can register, and this will happen this coming Saturday at Nichols State.
Yeah, she's fantastic. She does a phenomenal job with the program without much resources. But again, it's going to be at Nichols under the pavilion by Gidra Stadium. It's going to start at 1:00. It'll be 1 to 4. And again, you can sign up online, as I said earlier. If you do want to sign up on site, you can. But if that's the case, show up early enough to fill out the paperwork.
Boo, thanks so much for joining us. Man, always great to talk to you. And we worked together for a couple years. And, man, it was just unbelievable to hear all your knowledge about it and how it transforms the sports different ways, and so many people adapting to that. And so you've made a big difference, especially Bayou River Parish area, in speaking to so many coaches about not only strength training, but also about the sprint part and muscle tissue stuff. You've done a phenomenal job.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate the chance to come on with you guys today.
Thanks so much. Boo Schicksnyder does an unbelievable job. And again, part of 13 NCAA championship teams, 2 junior college national titles, and, you know, talk about 19 Olympic gold medalists, over 24 Pan American game medalists. Guy knows what he's talking about. When we come back, we'll do our Bet 365 triple option feature. I know mine will be on the tight ends group this year. So we'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long, Steve Geller, and it's our Bet 365 triple option feature. And I'll do mine on the tight ends. This unit is not as good as it was 2 years ago from a talent depth standpoint, but it's pretty close. And basically, man, you got couple guys that'll go in the first round, and I think 2 guys that'll go in the top 20, Tyler Warren from Penn State, Colston Loveland, both different style players. Tyler is more of a guy that you play inside. Colston is more of the flex tight end, but I've seen Tyler Warren, they've used him as an X and a Y receiver at H-back, fullback, halfback, quarterback, played center a couple times, also played on special teams. Man, he is one heck of a football player. And, man, you watch him on tape. Some of those throws by Drew Allar. And people say, boy, Drew Allar looks good. Yeah, you know what makes him look good? Tyler Warren. Either that or get a new TV. I mean, Tyler Warren, man, he made Drew Allar look really good last year with some catches that were a little bit outside of his catching radius, and he made it look simple. Colston Loveland didn't get as many chances last year because of what happened, J.J. McCarthy going to the NFL. They had a quarterback there that really struggled with accuracy, but I think both of those guys go in the top 20, and it's close for me with Tyler Warren and Colston Loveland, and then at the 3 spot, Mason Taylor from LSU. And I think it's possible, not saying probable, but possible, he could sneak into round 1, but I look at him as a very early second round pick, big, tall, drink of water, sure-handed, catches the ball well, and everything is so smooth, the way he runs his route, the way he catches the ball out front with his hands, and he's fearless going over the middle. You know, he don't mind getting bounced around a little bit. And he's gotten better as an inline blocker. He's become a little bit more physical. And I don't need him to knock him out. I just need him to get in the way as a run blocker. And then that's the wild card in Elijah Arroyo from Miami of Florida. And Elijah, it would hurt the first 2 years at Miami of Florida. And then Arroyo last year, you saw him. He was a favorite target of Cam Ward. When they were looking for something, he got open. And at 6'5 and 250 pounds, there weren't a lot of guys that were going to match up with him over the seam catching the football. I think you will have 4 tight ends go within the top 50. That's how good a group this is. And then certainly after that, a Terrence Ferguson from Oregon, Gunnar Helm from Texas, Harold Fannin Jr. from Bowling Green, who put up some huge numbers. A favorite of mine, maybe like a 3rd, 4th round pick, Aronde Gadsden II. His dad played the NFL for a while. He was the favorite target of Kyle McCord at Syracuse. Caught a lot of passes there. Jay Bringstone from Clemson, pass catching tight end. Mitch Evans is more of the blocking tight end from Notre Dame. So they got a large group of them here. But I think what's unique is you'll see 4 tight ends picked within the top 50. And it goes to show those guys probably 10 years ago, they'd have been playing outside linebacker. I know one thing. I know about Mason Taylor's dad, Jason Taylor. I know what he played. He was a stand-up outside linebacker when he played in the NFL. So goes to show the changing world of tight ends, and it is a good group of tight ends in this 2025 draft class.
Guys, I'm going with the New Orleans Pelicans. There's three games left in this season. They are limping towards the finish line. We got out for this evening Jose Alvarado. He's dealing with right calf soreness. Bruce Brown, right knee soreness. And Eve Missy has left ankle soreness. So a lot of soreness going on with this team. We know injuries have been a problem all year long. And they last season... what a difference a year makes. Last season, the Pels had the best road record in the NBA. They were 28-14. Right now, they're 7-33 in road games. They're in Milwaukee this evening. If they lose to the Bucks, they'll tie the worst record in franchise, road record in franchise history. Like I said, with the loss this evening in Milwaukee. The good news is when you start looking at stuff for the upcoming draft lottery, right now, the Pels are slated at 48% to land in the top four and have a 12.5% chance of getting the top overall pick. We've been going through mock draft simulators. Well, I've been doing the lottery simulator trying to get that Pels that number one pick.
I only did it once, Steve. I did it once and I got the number two pick.
Okay.
So I'm like, that's it.
Hey, that ain't
I'm
bad.
Never doing it again. I will never do it again. But listen, guys, I mean, it's been a brutal year, as we all know, and it's coming to an end. We have three games left. The 76ers did it. They broke their 12-game losing skid. They beat the Washington Wizards. So now the Pelicans will lock down that fourth spot with a loss in any of their final three games. We had someone that texted in when we were talking about this the other day, guys. Could the Pelicans get upwards of the pick, the third best odds? And the issue with that was that Charlotte would have had to win out. They lost to Toronto last night, so that's out of the question. Basically, the Pelicans are now locked into the fourth best odds. So we'll get to that when we cross that bridge in a couple weeks. Basically close to a month. Guys, I'm going with the ace matchup on Friday night. Bill Frankes, our friend in the sports information department over at LSU, sent out the pitching matchups for this weekend between LSU and Auburn, a top 10 showdown in at Plainfield Park. You have Cade Anderson versus Sam Dutton on Friday night. And I remember, you know, we were hyping up that Kyson Witherspoon versus Cade Anderson matchup. Cade obviously came out on top. 2-0 victory. Cade goes a complete game shutout against Oklahoma. Sam Dutton has just as good of numbers. He may not be as good of a prospect as Kyson Witherspoon, but the former LSU Tiger this year, guys, 4-2 record, 2.66 ERA, 51 strikeouts in 44 innings pitched. And, you know, Mike, Steve and I talked with Mark Etheridge about it last night, and Mark said the one pitch that's been the difference maker for him is this curveball. It went from being like a mid-70s mile-per-hour pitch, 75 to like 77. He changed his grip on it, and now it's dropped all the way down to basically 73 to 70. And he had Alabama flummoxed. And Alabama's got a good offense, guys. They have one of the best players in the entire SEC, and they couldn't do anything against Sam Dutton last week. They run Auburn got a run-roll victory 10-0. In seven innings, he didn't allow a single run against a good Alabama offense. You know, we'll see what he does against LSU, but it feels like every Friday, guys, it's ace versus ace. I know that Cade Anderson's a great one, but, man, I'm tired of seeing some of these good arms in the SEC.
Well, you go see him when you play him on Friday. And we want to tell everybody, you can hear that series Friday and Saturday. It'll be on at 6 o'clock right here on the Big 870 WWL. And on Sunday, 2 p.m., and you can hear it live right here on the Big 870 and free on the Odyssey app. Charlie, that's it for Bet365 Triple Option. Finishing up here in our number one of sports talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long, Steve Geller. Want to tell everybody at 5:20, we'll have on with us Michael Arkish, who wrote the book The Golf 100, the top 100 golfers of all time. And, man, it's all opinion, but we'll get Mike to talk about that and certainly to talk about all the major tournaments that are going on, certainly at Augusta, and also Jack Marucci at 5:40 right here on the Big 870.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long. I want to tell everybody at 5:20 today, we'll have on with us Michael Arkush, who wrote the book, The Golf 100, ranking the top 100 golfers in golf history. Interesting take with Mike, and we'll have him talk about the book. And, you know, like I said, told Charlie, I saw three of the top five. I just film on Bobby Jones and Ben Hogan. I didn't get to cover those guys at that time. And at 5:35, he's Thomas Edison of sports technology. And Jack Marucci at LSU all those years, and he's come up with some unbelievable things technology-wise. Also, sold the Marucci bat situation, and we'll get him to talk about that, the torpedo bats that are now in vogue, certainly with the Yankees, and get him to talk about his start in the technology world of sports, which he's opened up a lot of doors. And he didn't just wake up one morning and said, that's what I'm going to do in this life. So I'll let Jack tell his story starting around 5:35, 5:40. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Let's go to Philip. Philip, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
What's up,
Philip? Good, Philip.
Okay. All right. Mike, I'm going to save my draft question for another day, but I want you to take us back in time a little bit. Today on NFL Network, they kind of brought up, you know, what the draft was like before they had television and everything. Can you enlighten the fans going back, you know, what the draft, you know, the Saints draft, you know, before there was TV, how it was ran.
Well, part of that is it was on radio. And so I know here on WWL they did it along with, I think, one other station in New Orleans, that when the Saints would make a pick, they would come on the air and announce it. And a lot of times the Saints were picking so high back then, you didn't have to wait too long if the draft started at 9 o'clock in the morning to get who the pick is. But it was totally different. I know Archie tells the story. This is 1971, so this isn't like ancient history. He got pulled out of class to get a phone call from the Saints, and he talked to John Meacham Jr., the owner. He talked to J.D. Roberts, the head coach. Hung up the phone, went back to class. Think about how they do it today. But it was really covered that way and done mostly by radio. There was no live TV coverage until the 80s, and ESPN really spun that into a franchise of its own. But I never forget, this is probably 1975. Pete Finney wrote an article in the Times-Picayune and sort of set the stage of what we would see later on, that he could see one day Walter Cronkite, who, you know, he was the guy on CBS National News, that he would be the guy giving you the picks as the first round came apart. And so, it's a totally different world. You heard it on the radio or you read it in the newspaper, but it was the coverage until ESPN came involved, and they were looking for content at that time. And the draft gave it to them. It was real live, kind of happening in front of you. And so that's how it came about. But I know as a kid growing up, you would listen to either WWL or there was another station in town. And as soon as the Saints would pick, they would come up and give you the selection, and you would get a little bio of that particular player. That's how it was done back then. And it seems to be a crazy world. And now it's one of the most watched events on ESPN. And it's on the NFL Network, ABC. huge ratings come out of that. So that's how it was done back then. It was mostly, I would say 99% of it was either radio or newspaper coverage. WFAN in New York was the first radio station in 1976, I think I'm right about this, to actually cover it on the radio.
It's pretty incredible, Mike, the evolution. I mean, you think of how, and the NFL loves doing this for like all their events in the offseason because it keeps them in the highlight, so to speak, for basically all 12 months of the year. You know, you think of the combine now and how that's evolved as well, but also the schedule release, all these random kind of events, they've kind of turned into, you know, not necessarily like the money turning machine or anything like that, but they stay in the news, right? They stay busy.
You know what it is, Charlie? It's reality TV.
Yeah, effectively. And you're hopping from city to city now with the draft and, you know, Green Bay's going to host it this year and you'll see, you know, they'll boo whatever Bears representative goes up to say the picks and the later rounds and everything like that. So it's just the evolution. It's been really fascinating to see because, you know, obviously that's way before my time, but seeing how big it is now, as you kind of mentioned, it's a huge event for all 32 fan bases. And we talked a little bit about it too, Mike, with every fan base or every team holding their first round pick, every single fan base is invested this year. And so that adds
everything.
To it too.
One thing hasn't changed the same, though. One thing stays. Fans of the Jets, Giants, and Eagles, man, they tell you right off the bat if they like the selection or not. Yeah. Man, Andy Reid, they booed him almost out of the arena when he picked Donovan McNabb ahead of Ricky Williams.
Yeah.
Man, we watching it as we doing the coverage for WWL, Buddy DiLiberto and I, and man, they had a lot of Eagles fans. They were throwing stuff on stage, and I mean giving him the raspberry from one end to the other about not picking Ricky. And so that part, Jets, Giants, Eagles fans, they let you know if that pick isn't who they think it should be. Let's go back to our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Jimmy and Gretna. Jimmy, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, Charlie. Hey, man. Happy birthday, man.
Thanks, Jimmy. I appreciate it.
Yeah, dude. Hey, look, put it on autopilot there with Mike. Just play Bobby Hebert, you know, doing his rant from about 6 months ago. And come on down to the French Quarter Fest, man. We're here, dude. Put it on autopilot.
There you go.
We need a designated driver for him.
Mike, what's his favorite catchphrase to say over and over? You tell me.
Who's
that,
Charlie?
You're only as good as your last, I don't know, something like he always says that one and this and that. But we'll hear from him again.
What have you done for me recently? Or what have you done for me lately?
What have you done for me recently?
Put that on auto replay. Come on down to the French Quarter. Come to the French Quarter Fest. Come get a hand grenade. We're headed down there now to go see Bag of Donuts at 6:30.
Oh, well, you'll have a good time. Man, Bobby and I, we partied with Bag of Donuts a couple times.
We had
a good time.
Hey, listen, yeah, man, I did good in the stock market the last 24 hours.
You did pretty well.
Hey, listen, the Pelicans, look, to see, like Charlie said, the season's coming to an end. We got two home games left tomorrow night and Sunday. Man, it's below a G League tonight in Milwaukee. The front court, we talked about it last summer. It was going to be a major hole for us. But again, Carlo Makovich and Ives Mici have impressed me enough to think that there'll be two solid building blocks in the next year. I know Zion's having some drama with some girlfriends fighting over him, but, hey, look, we still got $1 tickets, and this is the last call on that subject because after this weekend, guys, it's over. I'm kind of sad to see the Pelican season end. It's just been a major disappointment. I'll finish with this. Why don't we try, because we have talent on the roster, why don't we try to bring some out-of-state or out-of-pocket medical staff to kind of keep these guys in good shape or do some off-season training, because we have too much talent to have 60-70% of the roster get hurt every year like this.
Jimmy, it's a question I get asked about every day.
Yep.
And part of that, too, is self-discipline on your own. Come on, you're a professional athlete. You got to take care of your own body. But I do think in this case here, the Pelicans have to take a long look at that. They really do. To bring in maybe another voice in the room to help them out from that standpoint. But a lot of this, now if it's a broken bone, there's nothing you can do about it. But we've seen way too many injuries. And so if there's a different course in line for training, you got to hear different people's opinion on it, because what you're doing ain't working.
Mike, I said it last week. The Pelican season was almost done before it started. And all the injuries that just avalanched early on was unbelievable. And to Jimmy's point about all the players out tonight, they have 11 players out tonight. Rod Walker from The Advocate, our friend, posted this earlier today, said remaining Pelicans players, you have Keon Brooks, Jamal Kane, who had a great pass to Joel Myers the other night, by the way, Carlo Mackovich, Elfrid Payton, Lester Quiñones, Antonio Reeves, Jeremiah Robinson-Earl, and Kyler Kelly. So those are the players that the Pelicans will have to work with tonight against the Milwaukee Bucks, and you can understand why Milwaukee is 15.5-point favorites tonight.
Charlie, you heard me say this late in the Saints season. The offseason will be much more adventurous than the games itself.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be the same thing with the Pelicans.
No, listen, the draft lottery is going to be huge. The night of the draft lottery, when we find out where the Pelicans will officially be picking, is going to set up a lot of discussion for who the Pelicans should take early on in the 2025 NBA draft, which, you know, kind of an early preview, looks like a very solid class. And if the Pelicans stay where they are, they have a very good chance to land up in the top four, which is exactly what you want to see from this, you know, kind of miserable season.
I want to thank Philip and Jimmy for the call. We'll be back, and when we come back on, we'll have on with us Michael Arcus, who wrote the book, The Top 100 in Golf, and an interesting take on the top 100 golfers of all time, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long running things behind the scenes. And on our Oakwood Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line, just comes out with the book, The Golf 100, Michael Arcus. Mike, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Mike, it's a great concept. And, you know, I've been involved with some people who have written books on NFL players and that sort of thing in college football. My thing is, the golf era, it's changed a little bit, certainly because of the courses, but it's an individual sport, unlike football, unlike basketball or baseball. And I think it's an interesting take on that top 100. And I was telling Charlie, you know, I'm old enough. I remember, man, watching Nicholas and Palmer kind of go off on one another. And then we saw the Tiger era. Most of us didn't really get to see Bobby Jones and Ben Hogan. And the fact that you would put them in the book that early, to me, is a great testimony of their talents and you opening up people to another generation of just how good Ben Hogan and Bobby Jones are.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that, because that's my intention. I wanted everyone remembers that golf wasn't invented by Arnold Palmer or Tiger Woods. All these incredible players from the past, Jones, Hogan, Snead, Nelson, I could go on and on. They paved the way for the greats today. They didn't make a lot of money. They didn't make quite as many headlines, perhaps, but they made the game better and put everyone in position to take advantage of that afterwards. And all the players of today owe them so much gratitude.
One of the things, too, is TV. I just think the expansion of TV and the different channels, if it's with Fox, if it's with ESPN, the Golf Channel, I think also has given another generation a look at tournaments they wouldn't necessarily see. And I think that's a huge plus for the golf game, the way you see it today.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, in Netflix has a documentary that they've had a couple of years now about the PGA Tour players. We learn a lot more about the players. My only feeling is I wish the players would be more expressive at times, more relate more to the crowd the way Palmer did, the way other greats from the past did. I mean, they're the reason they are rich and famous is because of us, and they can't forget that.
One of the things, Mike, too, is the involvement with women today. I think you have people, and I have friends of mine that they didn't grow up watching golf. They maybe heard their dad talk about it, or grandfathers talk about it, or their brother. But now they play a little bit of golf, and they are really interested in golf. And I think that's the other element of it. You have a lot of women today with a tremendous amount of interest in the golf game today. That was not there when I grew up in the 70s and 80s.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. I mean, look at Nelly Korda, the great woman player now. There's a lot of interest in her. In my book, 15 of the 100 players are women, with the top player being Mickey Wright at number 6. Mickey Wright had, many people think, Ben Hogan among them, the greatest swing ever.
Real quick, Mike, before Mike gets to his next question, I wanted to ask you, in the promo for it, that every different golf fan has a favorite golfer, right? Or who do you think is the best? And you'll get different answers. So I wanted to ask you about your quote-unquote like rubric for determining the top 100 golfers of all time, specifically at the top. Because once you get to the top 5 or top 3 type of guys, you'll get different answers from golf fans of who the best golfer of all time really is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of all this. There's a debate. But I came up with a numerical system, and I think that system reinforces the fact that Jack Nicklaus is the greatest player of all time. He's got 20 majors, not 18, as many people think, because I'm giving him the 2 U.S. Amateurs he won in 59 and 61. They were taken away. I want to give them back to him. 19 seconds and 9/3. Think of that. 39, that's 40. Jeez. Let me do my math. 47 times, first, second, or third in a major championship.
My dad, you could not convince him. And while he loved Nicklaus, his deal was Sam Snead.
Yeah.
He said that was the guy. Because I remember growing up, that was the guy. When he watched golf, that's who he watched, was Sam Snead.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at Snead's swing. It was so incredibly smooth. The only drawback negative I can say about Sam is that he never won the U.S. Open, and he had his chances. He blew his chances. It's a shame, because I think that takes away a little bit of his greatness. But he won 82 times, tied with Tiger for the most. And again, that swing was just a work of art.
Yeah, it was picture perfect. In today's game, well, we see the young man in Scotty Scheffler and what he's been able to do. Rory McIlroy is kind of that you either really love him or you dislike him. And listen, I think that's good for golf, to have them kind of square off with one another a little bit. We see today just how well Justin Rose is playing at the Masters. But your thoughts on the potential of a Scotty Scheffler and one day being in that upper echelon of golfers?
Well, he's got 2 majors. He hasn't turned 30 yet. So, yeah, I mean, he's every opportunity to win 5, 6, 7 majors. And once you do that, you're now at this higher level. Very steady. When he putts well, forget about it. And he seems like he's putting really well now. So he's going to be hard to beat at Augusta this week, that's for sure.
Mike, one of the things, too, is in looking back at the generations, do you think it's tougher today to win a tournament? Is the talent level better today than, say, 1975 or 1985?
Okay, I'm glad you brought up 75. I think there are a lot more players who can win, but there were a lot more great players back then in 75. Miller, Watkins, yeah. Watson, Trevino, Weisskopf, Irwin, so many who are in the Hall of Fame. And now, I mean, now this generation is a little bit better, but in the Tiger generation, he only had a handful of that level. So I think Nicklaus, that era of the 70s is the glory era of golf.
Who would you? I'm going to throw it out to you, Mike. Who do you think will win the Masters? And, you know, I always thought right off the bat, man, this is Scheffler's gig here. He's not won the major tournament this year, but I think maybe the way he's hitting the ball and putting, he got a shot here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you had asked me 3 or 4 hours ago, I would have stuck with my pick of Colin Morikawa, but he stumbled down the stretch coming home today, and Rory had a double coming in. So, and Rose, I mean, Rose has had a lot of leads in Augusta, hasn't won. So, odds on right now, it's got to be Scotty. He's playing really well, 4 under, he's right there.
Tell everybody exactly how they can get your book. I know Amazon carries everything today. I'm sure it's at a lot of the local bookstores, but exactly how they can get the book, and it's the Golf 100.
Yeah, it's available on Amazon. Also, they can go to the Penguin Random House website, purchase it there. I encourage people to buy it. I encourage them to have arguments with their friends because that's the fun of it all.
Mike, I tell you what, just kind of skimming through it, you did a fantastic job in setting that book up. And your reasons for that top 100, if you're a golf fan, you got to get this book, The Golf 100. You did a great job writing this book.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All righty. Michael Arcus did a great job. Again, on Amazon.com, you can find the book, The Golf 100. And on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, he's the Tom Edison of sports technology in the world. We got present Jack Marucci. Jack, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Yes, sir. How are we doing today?
We're doing great. Jack, I want to ask you right off the bat because, man, seeing what you've done throughout the years, it's not like you rolled out of bed one morning and said, hey, this is what I'm going to do. So tell us about your upbringing, and I think that had a lot to do with your vision on sports technology and different things that you tinkered with throughout the years.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, because we look at even backgrounds of players when we start, you know, when you recruit these guys, what are their demographics? What are areas that they're from? And I think there is a translation on a lot of these guys. I'm, you know, nothing's 100%, but you know, my background, we came up through a coal mining town in Western Pennsylvania, you know, your typical blue collar family, that, you know, a lot of immigrants where we grew up. So most of the people that came over to this country where we were from, I guess they were a little bit more curious, you know, they had a little bit more of that DNA. They weren't afraid to, you know, leave. My mom was from Spain. Our other side was from Italy. My grandfather came over. He was 15, then he got deported because you had to be 16. And, you know, it's funny to see all these things on these Ellis Island reports. There's a big stamp, got deported. You know, but, I think it is in a little bit of your DNA. So, you know, so we grew up in a very, you know, blue collar area, a lot like Louisiana, and it's very similar, and that's why I could always relate to a lot of the situations here. And you know, I think it does build a little bit more resilience in things that you're going to try. I think if you look at, again, I'm comparing Louisiana and where we grew up in Western PA. Go look at the population that came out of there, even from, you know, actors, singers, people that came up with, you know, different inventions. I mean, my little hometown of Uniontown, that's where the Big Mac started. At the time, they could create any sandwich they wanted to. They gave the franchise the flexibility to make any type of sandwich. So that's where the Big Mac started, because they were experiment with different ways to make these sandwiches. And so I think it's just Gene Steratore is from our area, the official that you hear. I mean, we're not from a big area, but it's crazy the population that you see that have come out of those those small areas. And I say this about a lot of Louisiana. I was talking to Alfred Blue, who's a running back for us, and he's from a small town, I think 3,000-4,000. At one time, they had three or four active football, NFL football players. And that is just unheard of. Now, sometimes I think we take it for granted, but I think it's the upbringing that they have, because he says, you know, we're from these close-knit areas where everybody knows you, and you're held in check also. So you're going to have discipline, because the policemen know your parents know the teachers know the policemen. So, and I think that's what's kind of neat about that. That's what we kind of saw when you talk to the Navy SEALs. They say a lot of these people that come out as a Navy SEAL are from these type of areas. They don't go out recruited. That's who comes out at the wash. So you have to be a little bit more, I think, resourceful. I think, you know, when you come up through these environments. So, you know, I,
and I'm thankful. I went back and talked to our baseball team. They asked me to come back, and it's a very impoverished area because a lot of the coal mining's out and all the steel mills and everything is kind of gone, and you're left with some situations that aren't the best condition. So, but I told them, I said, look, embrace it. When you get out of high school, when you have an opportunity to go somewhere, you're going to have, you're going to respect the areas you're from. You're going to respect from being from these blue collar areas. Again, I always talk about resiliency, and they'll have a little bit more, tolerance. So, then as I came up and grew, we had a restaurant, and, we all kind of worked around the restaurant from the family side. And my dad was always coming up with ideas, and I think we always were looking for the next, thing. And we weren't afraid to try it. I think that's the thing. We weren't afraid to have failure. So then I think you just apply a common sense trait to it. I mean, why don't we look at this, or why don't we? And so I think that's what helped me a lot in the football part. I came up as an athletic trainer where you are interacting with all the players, and you get a relationship with the player, and you understand them. But if you communicate with them, we're sharing ideas. Why don't we look at this? What will make you a better player? What will make you, see the field better? So that's where my brain start working. But also, I realized, being so fortunate, seeing four, national championship teams with four different coaches. One of those were at Florida State with Coach Bowden. That was the Warwick Dunn team and Charlie Ward. I also noticed the type of player we had. Yes, we had talent, but I was always big in the traits, and I start observing that these kids that were our championship teams, they were the better people, the higher character. So that's where we started to say, okay, let's start looking at these championship teams. Let's see what the marks that they have of these traits. And it led to another thing. Well, I wanted to know how they processed the game. And that's where this S2 Cognition came in, where the company came in, and we helped kind of launch them. And that allowed us to really identify how these guys see the game. It doesn't have anything to do with a book smart, as we would call it. It's how quick you can make decisions, how quick you can scan the field. Do you understand if then, situations, do you get distracted? Can you improvise? And so these are things that I knew if we could identify that would allow us to start narrowing the scope on identifying players. And so we start looking at all these traits, but again, it took us to the next level. And that's where the VR piece really came in, because it only made sense that why can't we train somebody? We have this technology that's starting to, develop along with the AI. So let's see if we can take the pressure off of a player that doesn't have to take all these physical reps, because we understand the separator is the cognition piece. And if you have that, and we can build that, which we, did with Jaden Daniels, and it allowed him to grow. But I will say this, you're only as good as the people around you. I've been very fortunate to have a great, group. I work right now with Mario Macaluso, who's side by side on this, but it also takes the coaches to buy in. It takes good coaching. So look, all the things that we do, it doesn't mean somebody's going to turn into Jaden Daniels. He had good work ethic, and he bought into what we were trying to do. He bought in what the coaches were going to do. So I think that's the other thing. You have to have a system, and I've been very fortunate that people, would take this information that we're able to identify to assist a player or technology, and it allowed us all to grow. So I think, holistically, I think that's where the thing starting to click. I always believe it has a 1% chance to change something. Well, let's look at it. Why don't we? And that's why we have the reputation that LSU has a really forward-thinking piece. And I got contacted last year. One of the coaches says, hey, Coach Belichick wants to come down here and look at this stuff. And he's coming down, I think, for the Manning camp. And I didn't know Coach Belichick at all. And so he came down. This was right before the season. And
he came in and he started looking at all this stuff, and he was just thoroughly impressed with it because, you know, we were talking, and he's from the area where there's MIT and Harvard, and, you know, of course he's tapped into all that. But there was like a disconnect. The folks just couldn't connect. They couldn't present the data. They just didn't have, they didn't understand the game. So what he said to us, he goes, what you guys have done here at LSU makes a lot of sense. It's easy to follow. It really has really gives us a solid foundation on what we're looking for in data. He loved the VR. They said they tried to build out with Raytheon, the big military supplier, him and he came down with Matt Patricia, one of his colleagues, and they said they tried to do this and they weren't able to do it. So he actually has the technology now. He asked us to help him kind of set it up over at North Carolina. And I told him, as long as you're not an SEC team, we're good to go.
Pretty good, Jack. Jack, one of you guys told me this, and I don't know if it's true or not, but you always talked about a dominant eye. You know, everybody's right. Got a dominant right. eye. And so, yeah. Man, I'm at a camp one day, and I'm talking to Justin Jefferson, and we talking about different things. And he say, hey, I'm one of the few guys. I don't have a dominant eye. I said, what do you mean? He said, I can see it out of both eyes the same. I was like, come on, Jeff. He's like, no. He said, when you talk to Marucci, he said, ask him if that's not true.
So it's funny. He came back this season, and he came up to me, he goes, I know I have people call you because I said, well, we'll call him because he goes, I didn't know those things about me until you start telling me that. And he goes, I didn't know how I could process. And so he had all these traits, but he is the only player I saw. So we run guys in routes. We have a wearable. And what it does, it locks onto your pupil. So we can see the stimulation. So it's very objective. It's not like it's something that's made up. So we actually run you into the routes that are the most common that we run. We run them at both directions. So you might have a right eye lead route. So if you're from the left side, then you may have a left. If you're on the right side, you'd have a left eye lead route. So you're breaking in. So your left eye. If you're on the other side, the left side. On the left side, I'm getting mixed up. Your right eye would be the lead. Looking inward. So if you run a slant, for example. So again, I'll say it again. If you're on the right side breaking in, that's your left eye lead side. If you're on the left side, that's your right eye lead side. So, and if some people just think about it, which way you'd want to catch it, they probably almost could tell you. But we want to make it objective. So we do test you. This will be right after spring ball. We'll start testing these guys. Because we want to put these guys in routes, especially the money route, we know that they're going to see it the best. And I think that's the caveat in making this thing work. So, but if we need to do a head adjustment where we can lower the drop rate to bring the other eye around, that's something we would do. But Justin Jefferson, he was the only player, he's right, that I've seen – switch eye dominance, you know, as the ball's coming in. Now, Justin also had, he has character and he has high-end processing, so he has these tools that was an easy to say, if you like his talent, he's definitely going to be a high-end player.
Because sometimes Justin, he wanted to kind of yank my chain a little bit, but on this part, he was right. Jack, listen, thanks so much for joining us. Man, we want to get you back, certainly talk about other things that you're doing, but and I mean this, you are the Thomas Edison of sports technology, brother.
I don't know about all that, but I appreciate
you,
it.
You got thanks, it, baby. Thanks so much. Thank all you, right. Jack. Jack Marucci does an unbelievable job. And, man, talk about cutting edge of sports technology. Jack Marucci does that in Baton Rouge. Just an unbelievable, talented gentleman there and helping the LSU sports department as a whole. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTillo along with Charlie Long. We went a little bit long with Jack Marucci, but, man, what a great interview. And Jack, don't catch a breath, man. He's great with an answer. So we'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
Finishing up here in our number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTillo along with Charlie Long. I want to tell everybody to want to thank Jack Marucci and also Michael Arkesh, both great guests to have on with us. But, Steve, I think you'll like this. The Eagles have signed former LSU wide receiver Terrace Marshall Jr. That's all they need, another guy that can put the ball in the end zone.
Maybe Terrence can help them bring another Super Bowl back to Philly.
What you got going on in the 6 o'clock hour, Steve?
I'm going to get a little bit of Willie Green's pregame coverage of their game against the Bucks tonight. Not many Pels in action, just 8 players available for Willie's squad.
We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break.
What is going on, everybody? Steve Geller, Charlie Long, bring you until 6:30 this evening as we get ready for the Pelicans' final road game of the season. They're in Milwaukee this evening. Want to take a quick break, though, and get everybody's attention. And from crew of WWL, Charlie Long, a very happy birthday to you, sir. Appreciate all the great work you do, and hopefully you have a great one this year. You deserve it, man.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it, man.
You have any big plans for this evening? Or
no,
not,
it's going to be
not to the weekend.
It's going to be low-key. I might participate in some French Quarter Fest activities
later
on. But tonight, I think it's going to be kind of chill. I'm going to tune into this Pelicans game, the road finale that we're about to dive into. Even with all these, back end of the bench players popping up. We'll see how it all goes tonight, Steve. At this point, you know, we kind of projected it yesterday that the Pelicans were going to end up with the 4th best lottery odds.
Right.
The one team that could have caught them, the Philadelphia 76ers, who are running an unbelievable tank. If you look at basically since February, effectively the last 2 months, it's been unwatchable for Philadelphia 76er fans. So they are charging down the standings, but they beat the Wizards last night, which means that the Pelicans would have to win out to surpass them. Yes, Philly ran an incredible tank. They had lost 12 straight. They were right on the Pelicans' heels, but they won last night, which means that if the Pelicans lose any of their final 3 games, they'll end up with the 4th best lottery odds.
Yeah, and I've told you during Triple Option, I've been playing with the lottery odds simulator, and on the 3rd click, the Pelicans got the number 1 pick. So I like that. 3 times a charm.
I am very superstitious, right? So, like, I did it once, and they got the number 2 pick. I'm like, I'm good. I'm good with that. Steve, we'll do a deep dive into the NBA draft, because kind of like what Mike was saying earlier, the offseason is going to be more interesting for Pelican fans, right? Where you can see this is a good draft class. The Pelicans are going to have a top pick somewhere in the top 7, basically, is where they are right now. And you're going to bring in a quote-unquote blue-chip prospect in this good draft class to add to your team. It's going to be a matter of which prospect is it? Could they get up to number 1 and get Cooper Flagg? That would be amazing. But even like the next tier, right? Cooper Flagg's in his own tier, and we've talked a little bit about this before. But right below him, Dylan Harper, the point guard, shooting guard, kind of combo guard from Rutgers, is number 2. Then there's another gap below him where it's Ace Bailey, who is the wing from Rutgers, and then VJ Edgecombe, who's the wing from Baylor. So those two guys are also in their own tier. And then there's a tier below that. So getting a top 4 pick this year is super, super important. And, you know, the Pelicans have positioned themselves to be in a pretty good spot come draft lottery night.
Do you think, though, that maybe if they end up with a 3-4 or lesser overall pick, they could be inclined to trade that to a team for a piece?
I hope not. Nope. I'm not doing it. I've seen Domantas Sabonis buzz on social media, specifically X. No, I'm not giving up a top 4 pick in this draft for him. I'm sorry. Like, I'm taking the swing in the draft. That's the only way you get better. Like, I'm not looking at Sabonis. I know that there's been, I guess, lesser buzz about Devin Booker, maybe because the Phoenix Suns are in such a terrible spot and they have to blow it up. But you're going to have to give up a lot to get him. And it's, you know, maybe. But at the same time, Steve, as I mentioned, I am intrigued by this draft class. And we will talk with draft experts as we get closer and once we get into, you know, the Pelicans offseason, which is quickly approaching. And we'll get more kind of thoughts about some of these players that are at the top of the draft board. And in my opinion, I'm keeping the pick. Unless it falls out of like the top 5 or top 6 and you get stupid unlucky, then we could potentially talk about moving on from it. But I like this draft class enough to where if the Pelicans get that top pick, I'm keeping it. I'm using it.
And speaking of drafts, we're just 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. We'll be definitely getting a ton into that on our shows. Tonight, I mentioned, though, the final road game of the year for the Pelicans. You heard in Charlie's Sports Flash, Jose Alvarado, Bruce Brown, and Eve Missy all out for this evening. That leaves just eight players on this roster for Coach Willie Green to cycle in. He spoke just minutes ago as this team gets ready for that 6:30 tip-off, and here's what a little bit of what Coach Willie Green had to say.
I know eight guys just available tonight. How does that, at this point, does that change how you want to do rotations, or just knowing that you have such a limited bench, how does that kind of change things going?
I mean, obviously it limits the rotations, just having eight guys, but, you know, these guys will get a great opportunity to get on the floor and play against a quality opponent.
How important is that, especially with so many guys who are first year, second year, to have that chance against a team who is still very much playing for something?
It's extremely valuable for guys that, you know, probably wouldn't otherwise have these opportunities or be in this position. So we want to go out and take advantage of it, take advantage of trying to play up to our standards and competing, playing hard, playing together, and try to have fun with it.
How much does it help to have a point guard like Alfred in this situation? He knows so much of the plays and can kind of help direct when you have a bunch of otherwise, you know, relatively new players out on the court with him.
It's a huge help. He's a veteran. He's been in these circumstances a number of times. He makes people better on both sides of the ball. So he can get guys in their right spots, and he can calm us down a little bit. And that's going to help, you know, some of the younger guys.
Giannis is available for them. We didn't see him a few days ago. Is there any way you can just try to hinder what he can do, or what's the best way to try to
make it as tough as you can on him? You know, he's a great player for a reason, but you got to make it tough on him. He's got to see bodies, you know, can't allow him to get out and transition and attack us. And it's not going to be on one guy. It's a collective effort.
They also got Bobby Portis back after the suspension. He paid immediate dividends for them. Why is he so important to the team?
You know, he's a part of their core. He's a part of their championship run here. And he brings a level of toughness to this group. And he's been doing that since he's gotten here. So he steps on the floor. He's comfortable with the guys they have. They've all been together for a while.
Giannis, what do you observe about the way he gets his teammates involved, distribution-wise, and like the how and the when that he's decided to do it?
I think that's his growth. Is, you know, he understands that there's times where he's gonna be dominant and drive the ball and get to the free throw line, get to the basket. You know, he's added the sort of mid-range game, mid-range jump shot to his game, and then there's moments where he understands, like, let's get the ball to some of my shooters. You know, he's bringing it down in DHOs. Guys are coming off for shots or finding him in the pocket. And that's why he's so tough. That's why he's difficult to guard, because he can hurt you in a number of ways.
You heard it there. Pelicans head coach Willie Green speaking to the media right before tip-off coming up at 7 o'clock here on WWL. 6:30 pregame coverage right around the corner. Charlie mentioned in the Sports Flash the Pels were a 15.5-point dog. That's up to 16.5 now, I'm seeing on ESPN Bet.
Yeah, and who knows what it's going to be by the time tip-off is at 7 o'clock tonight. You know, we'll see. Maybe the Pelicans cover, but it's kind of hard to see him win tonight's game.
After tonight, two more games after that. They're both at home. We'll be taking on the Miami Heat tomorrow. And then on Sunday, closing things out against OKC. We're going to take a break and close things out after this. Stay tuned on WWL. Going to get a quick look at the Masters leaderboard as we get ready for Pelicans basketball in Milwaukee. After one round, it's Justin Rose atop everybody at a -7 leading the way. He is three strokes ahead of Corey Conner, Scottie Scheffler, and Ludvig Åberg, who are at -4. Three under par, we got Bryson DeChambeau, Tyrell Haughton. They are tied for fifth, and then there's a group of guys tied for seventh behind there. So after one round at the Masters, we got Justin Rose in the lead. Like I said, 7 under par. That'll resume tomorrow. Be keeping an eye on all that action. Also be getting more into NFL draft talk tomorrow. Me and Jeff Nowak going till 5:30 on Friday as we get ready for LSU baseball taking on Auburn, a Tiger versus Tiger series. Big top 10 matchup. Looking forward to seeing how that all shakes out for the Tigers, riding a 9-game win streak into this, I should say, LSU Tigers. Getting ready now for Pelicans basketball here on WWL.